The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Oh! Kim, what are you doing?
Well, I'm telling Mike and Dave, it's time to get on the show.
Oh, well, the Odyssey Files starts now.
Good evening, Para-X. It is 6:01 because for the second week in a row, I had difficulty connecting to the server. My name is Michael O'Neill. I am the host of the Odyssey Files here on Para-X. With me, as always, begrudgingly so this week, is my co-host, Mr. Dave Sawyering. How you feeling, Dave?
Oh, like about $29, maybe. Been down and out for the past week, so I got whatever crud's going around the Twin Cities that's making everybody's life miserable. I officially found it, captured it, ate a whole big pie of it, and I've been enjoying it for the past 6 or 7 days.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's somewhat awful.
It's been awful.
maybe then I will be a competitor against your wit and today. Joke went downhill fast. It's been somewhat of a rocky road although last week was really good. I really enjoyed Steph and Kim, who you heard our kind of new intro. I did play their Bigfoot call, which was that shriek of horror that you heard at the beginning of the show. But they were nice enough to do a little intro for us. So, but yeah, that one worked out really well. I enjoyed them on the show. I didn't have to do anything. I love it when that happens. So today is our week three of our 3-week stint into Bigfoot, where at least I hope we're going to stay on topic. Probably won't, because we never do.
But we might,
because I know you have a lot that you want to talk about with this particular topic.
Yeah.
Not so much Bigfoot,
right? But
the topic of what is Bigfoot,
right? Right. What could he be? Right.
What could he be? And I know one of the theories, and I hate it, and we'll get into that. Because I'm sure that you will bring it up, or I will, one of the two. But so take me away, Dave, because I got nothing.
Okay. All right. So last week, and I agree, I just wanted to say last week the show was fun with Steph and Kim on. So good luck to them in their research as they go out. I think they were going out this weekend, weren't they? Or was it last weekend? This weekend
weekend. It was this past weekend, and yep. I don't know how it went, except for the fact that Kim slipped on ice and now has a picture of a swollen foot all over Facebook.
Well, ouch. Well, hopefully that wasn't running from Bigfoot.
I don't think so. Although I didn't say it, but I was going to. I wanted to, but I want to say it looks like a Bigfoot. Oh, because it's all swollen. You see what I did there?
I did see what you did there. That was very funny. That's the first time I've played this in a week.
That is sleep deprived humor there.
Yeah.
I was about to swear.
You were.
I was.
You were.
I started to say mother and then ended it with meh. So I assure you, my mental faculties have not diminished that much. Where I need to start being like, bleh. So
drool cup needed.
Yeah, just give me some leeway here,
people,
please. All right, Dave. So go ahead.
All right, so let's jump right into kind of the whole Bigfoot thing. You know, since this is our last show, probably for a while. I mean, if we do it again, it'll be with probably like one of our friends that investigate that actually catches some really phenomenal evidence and wants to share it. And then obviously we would bring that back. So,
let's be sure. Last show about Bigfoot, not our last show.
No. Last show about Bigfoot. Yes.
Okay. Sorry. I just wanted to clarify.
No, hell, we're not going anywhere. Are you kidding me? No. It's popular. The endorsements are pouring in. So, getting back to the big hairy guy. So, we're going to talk about what he is or what he could be, what the possibilities are. So, let's start with an easy one. Going back into prehistoric times, there was a giant ape that roamed the Americas and up into the Canadian region. Gigantopithecus, I believe, is the name of it or what they called it. It was huge. It was a huge ape, just like everything in the prehistoric times were massive. You know, Megalodon and, you know, everything seemed to be like gigantic size back then. So, so there is the theory out there, obviously, that the sightings that people are having, that there is legitimacy to them. And I think that there, and we're going to get there too today, because I think there's a lot of legitimacy to a lot of sightings. I don't think they're all legit, obviously. But let's kind of break down the rationale of if this thing really could be a prehistoric giant ape. All right. So there are some species that have been around since prehistoric times, you know, the snapping turtle, the sturgeon, lake sturgeon, river sturgeons. They've been around. They're prehistoric. Alligator gars. So that said, and, you know, chime in there if you could think of any off the top of your head, Mike.
No.
But as you can kind of see from the three that I threw out there, they're mostly aquatic, water-based type of, you know, animals that have survived and adapted and still carry their prehistoric form. So could there be a gigantic land-based mammal that has remained hidden in our forest system and somehow survived from the prehistoric times? And I'm going to say no. Right. No. I'm going to say no.
my question to you was define gigantic, because when you say gigantic, I'm thinking King Kong, you know, he can scale buildings, but Bigfoot's like 7 feet tall. I mean, that to me is not gigantic. It's big, but it's not gigantic.
Well, right. So I got to do a quick look here. Because I forgot where I wrote it down at, but I'm thinking that this, Gigantopithecus. So there he is. So I'm thinking that he was somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 7 to 9 feet tall. And if that's so, then he would have been, you know, the same size as what the reports coming in for Bigfoot are. And so if that's the case, you know, that I would imagine that would lead people to think, well, geez, maybe it is, you know, maybe there is like a giant ape that survived. So the problem with it is, and here, let me take a peek here. So,
I want to inject a question
here. Yep. Go ahead.
Do they know about how big this, I'm not even going to pronounce it, this ape.
Gigantopithecus?
Sure. Let's just go with that.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. So from the fossils that they found, the average size that they've determined were 9.8 feet tall and weighing on average between 1190 and 1320 pounds. So I do believe
he would be considered morbidly obese.
Yeah, I would say that. You know, I mean, he's the perfect weight if he were 14 feet tall, obviously.
Yeah.
being as that he's only 9'8", you know, yeah, he's probably a little hefty.
A few too many pterodactyls there, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I'm still going to go with no.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold off on why, because it kind of mixes in with my theory as to whether Bigfoot is in fact real or not, which I'm assuming we're going to hit at the end as the conclusion.
Yep.
Okay. So okay. I'm going to hold off. But yes, I agree with you. I'm thinking no.
Okay, right. And I'm thinking no, too. It's an interesting concept only because this ape, it did roam the earth. There's plenty of fossils around and, you know, it was massive in size. So, you know, it's easy to see how people could throw that as a theory. All right. So moving on from there, let's touch on one that we haven't touched on yet at all, that it's a shapeshifter like a Wendigo. There could be some credence there. You know, it's seen a lot in Native American communities by Native Americans. It seems to have the ability to kind of come and go. So, you know, people will see it running across the road and then we'll stop and take a look and it just won't be there anymore. I've seen a couple of videos, not recently, but in my lifetime, of, you know, what appears to be a gigantic, you know, 10-foot tall, 1,000-pound hairy being running up the side of mountains that is, you know, and when people go walk over there to kind of challenge the, you know, the ability of like a human to do it. I mean, the slope of the hillside is so steep that without grabbing onto something and dragging yourself up, there's no way you could possibly get up this thing. And the footage shows this large being basically just running up the side of this hill like it was nothing. And it wasn't grabbing onto limbs or trees to pull itself up. It was just running. You know, they've been documented to be able to do, you know, leaps and stuff across roads somewhere between 8 and 10 feet, you know, like in one giant step. So if it is something like that, my question would be, my rational mind would say, what does it shapeshift into? Because a Wendigo basically is a man. And so it transforms from a man into a Wendigo, purportedly from eating human flesh. And so it becomes this monstrous being hungering for man's flesh. But what, you know, so if Bigfoot is a Wendigo or similar to what a Wendigo is, then what does it transform back into? I mean, is it somebody from a tribe? Is that a possibility? I mean, is there a way that through some sort of like ritual that they're able to transform themselves and project this type of gigantic, you know, scary type of being to kind of warn people or to get people to move away from a specific location? And if it is, could it be for religious reasons? Could it be burial sites? Could it be sacred, you know, sacred ceremonial sites from, you know, the beginning of time? I don't know. My mind's running all over the place. So must be the cold medication.
Yep. Still going to say no.
Okay. Okay.
You know, there haven't been a lot of sightings of Wendigos.
No, not at all.
Despite what Mr. DeMar, you know, claims.
Yes. He came to mind when I was thinking of that.
Yeah. you know, so that the Wendigo is still, as far as I'm aware, still like a mythical urban type legend. I mean, he's big, I believe, in Native American culture, but you know, to us, he's just, it's really nothing except, you know, a character we use in monster stories.
Right.
Bigfoot has personal, you know, personal experiences. You know, people right. have claimed to see him. You know, nobody's come across me like, hey, look at this photo or look at this video of this Wendigo I caught, you know, on camera.
Right.
So, I mean,
that's because I think if you see a Wendigo, it kills you. I don't think that you get to have any like found footage survivor film.
That would be pretty sweet, actually. Well, I mean, not for the person that happened to.
But, right.
You know,
but for us. For the rest of us, that can watch it, right?
Yeah, as for the people who revel in the pain and death of other people, yeah, it would be great for us. But I just can't see any sort of creature being like, you know what, I can shapeshift into anything. Let me do a 6-7 foot tall hairy ape. I can't get there. the logical right. sense of it.
And what would be the purpose of that? I mean, why would you transform into something like that?
Well, right. I mean, just so you can walk along the stream. And I mean, because nobody's ever been attacked by Bigfoot.
Well, you know, so it's there are a couple of reports of people having been attacked, but they're back into the, like the 20s and 30s.
Now, I was going to say, have they been attacked or have they felt threatened like it was trying to attack them?
Well, I don't know the legitimacy, so I'm not going to quote the whole thing because I'm not sure if I totally believe it. But there are two really good articles that come out of the Pacific Northwest of guys either stumbling upon a Bigfoot and kind of scaring it. And that's what the one sounded like anyway, and physically getting assaulted. And then the other one, the guy was in his cabin, and it was on a gold rush stream. And this Bigfoot for days walked and paced in the evening and at nighttime outside of his cabin and threw stuff at the walls, rocks and stuff at the walls of his cabin. And eventually the guy went out to confront it with his rifle and got into a scrap and got pretty tore up. Now, you know, your mind would say right away, well, that was probably just somebody trying to steal his gold, except for the fact that the guy survived and nobody stole his gold. So something attacked him. I mean, unless he fell into
a pricker bush.
Could be Fight Club.
he tripped and fell into a pricker bush.
There you go.
And he's like, well, I feel stupid, but you know what? I'll just tell people I got attacked by Bigfoot.
There you go. And it could have happened. I don't know. I wasn't there. So, you know.
That is when you want to say you should see the other guy.
Yeah. see the Bigfoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I shaved him.
I messed him up good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't get behind the shapeshifter theory.
I can't either. All. I can't either, so, but I'm throwing them out there because they're, no, you know, we wanted no, to kind
absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely. Let's discuss them.
Yep. We wanted to kind of wrap up, you know, our Bigfoot thing and kind of throw out there what it could be. And that's kind of what tonight's show is going to be. So, this one's going to be hard because there's no way to prove it at all one way or another. So, but I'll throw it out there. People say that he's an alien, that he's a member of an alien race.
Nope.
Well, that would explain a lot, you know, the ability to come and go.
Well, that would mean he would have to have a spacecraft. So you're saying that every time we see a UFO, that's a Bigfoot coming and going?
No. Highly unlikely. Something's in the craft, but I don't think it's, you know, Chewbacca.
Although, for as theories go, if I had to get behind one that I would want it to be the case, Bigfoot coming, or not Bigfoot, but Chewie and Wookiees coming to visit us
yeah.
would be my top.
Oh, yeah. Especially if they show up in the Falcon.
You know, the movie Galaxy Quest, where that alien race built the craft based on the show.
Yeah.
That would be awesome if some alien race got a hold of Star Wars and built the Millennium Falcon based on everything that they saw in the movies.
Yeah.
And then came to Earth. Ah.
That'd be
sweet. Yes.
Just don't get the Death Star plans. We don't need that.
Well, I mean, we know how to blow it up, so.
Well, true. But Luke's getting old, so.
Luke, I, for people who haven't seen The Last Jedi, I guess I clearly can't say anything.
Yeah. That's why I
don't want to spoil it.
No. Although you should have seen it by now if you're a fan, so.
Well, that's true. But, you know, and even I have, so. It's a good movie. I liked it. So not to go off on an accent ramp here again.
Again.
But yeah, it's a good movie. So Bigfoot, yep. Alien. No,
no. Okay.
All right. Now, so, all right. Now hold on. Alien from outer space. No.
Okay.
Let's be clear.
Okay. So that knocks out three of the popular theories that are out there.
Three? There's three different theories based on him being an alien?
No. Alien, shapeshifter, and Gigantopithecus.
Oh, okay. All right. The three that we have talked about.
Right. The three that we've talked about. So I did a look, and since going back before this time, obviously there were sightings. As we know, they found the giant footprints all the way back into the 1880s or... What was that British fur trapper? When was that? Like 1811, 1818? Was it that far back?
Was it 1811?
I'm thinking it might have been that far back. It was a long ways back.
It was definitely a long ways back.
But I'm only going in recent times because who knows, you know, what happened back then. So I took a look, and since 1950, there have been 3,313 documented sightings of Bigfoot. So, let's just take and throw, and just for conversation's sake, let's throw half of those away. As
3,313.
Yep.
A lot of threes.
Yep. And a one. There's a one in there too.
I know. But there's still a lot of threes.
Yep. So let's throw half of those out. So that's about 1,650 get tossed out as either people seeing something that was just natural, like a bear rubbing on a tree, and thought it was something else. I know that there's been accidental miss sightings from moose. People don't understand how big moose are. And they stand like 10, 12 feet tall. And when they don't have their racks, they've just got the big bald head. And if you see them stand up in something, it would scare the heck out of you. And you might just be like, oh, my God, it's, you know, I don't know what that was because I've never seen one before. And it takes off bolting through the scrub brush and you totally freak out and run the other way. Well, you don't want to tell all your friends that you peed your pants because you saw a moose. So obviously that became a Bigfoot. So let's knock half of that out. And then let's take, you know, another half for things that, let's just say, can't be proven or can't be investigated because of location or because the eyewitnesses aren't credible or at least credible enough to warrant a serious investigation. So if you take a look at the BRFO website, I mean, this is kind of like the basis of, you know, where a lot of the real technical data is, you know, they legitimately investigate all of the claims that have enough proof or evidence or solid sightings by solid citizens, they actually go out and investigate these sightings. According to Matt Moneymaker on the website, I think it was Matt anyway, so if I miss, I won't even say Matt, scratch that, because in case it's not Matt, I don't want to get any hate mail. So, but according to the BRFO website, there are only, of all the things that they investigate, there are only 2 to 3% that ever come out to be proven to be fake of the ones that they tackle. And they started their site in 1995. So let's just say, throwing all that together in a soup bowl, there's 800 and some, 820 legitimate sightings by the sheriff's department, by a pilot flying low over, you know, the Alaskan scrub brush or up in the Pacific Northwest, by people out hiking, by whatever. So 825 people roughly have seen something that caused them to become majorly concerned, either for their safety or for the safety of the area or whatever. So we can't just throw those away. We can't just dismiss 825 credible sightings. So what do you do with those? There has to be something there. Something has to be there.
So 2-3% of the claims that they tackle.
The BRFO tackles, yes.
Right. What is their criteria for saying whether something is fake or not? I mean, do they go to these places and find footprints? Or, I mean...
Well, they find, you know, that the... I think that basically from what they consider to be their fake site, you know, a site, what they would consider to be like a hoax or a fake sighting would be somebody coming forth and saying... Yeah, you know, I did it as a stunt and, you know, that footage that I showed you or that picture that I showed you, that was just my buddy running through. And then we put it on Photoshop and I'm really good at Photoshop and we manipulated it. Or if one of the credible witnesses upon further investigation and, you know, I won't say interrogation, but interviewing, ends up being not so credible the second or third time around as maybe they put together a really good first impression and then maybe that kind of wavered. And so they it lends a little bit of questionability to the claim. Then they're taking things like that and throwing it out.
Okay, so 2-3% is based on interviewing the people and people who freely admit that they created a hoax.
And going to the site. It's a combination of all those things, like actually going physically to the site and investigating the area, the location, looking for footprints, looking for hair samples, looking for, you know, anything. So here, I'm going to read you a little something here before we go to break, and then we can kind of pick up on this. So on the BRFO website, and this is kind of what I'm, you know, going back to this, Wikipedia states that 70 to 80% of sighting reports are fake. But the very uninformed Wikipedia, and I'm reading this verbatim, but the very uninformed Wikipedia editor attributes those arbitrary statistics to two people who are somewhat famous in the Bigfoot community for their unsubstantiated, overblown assertions. Those two people cited by the Wikipedia article have zero substantiation for their fabricated statistics of 70 to 80%. The BRFO is the only organization that receives reports in large enough numbers and investigates them to have any sense of a percentage of fake reports among total submitted reports in a given year. And so here, and then to go on here, this is might answer exactly. It says, so very few, if any, reports shown publicly on the BRFO site are fake. Because any reports that seem dubious are not shown on the site at all. And then if a report that does get shown publicly later turns out to be a fake, which happens at a rate of 2-3% a year out of 500 or so reports every year, that report is immediately removed from the collection. It says, thus, it's very possible that 0% of the reports shown on the BRFO site are fake, though a very uneducated and unqualified person like, and they mention this lady's name from Wikipedia, which I won't, might not believe more than 20 to 30% of what she reads ever. So and then it goes on to say that, you know, the BRFO's more educated research and investigators collectively spend a great deal of time and effort sorting through and investigating sightings reports to determine which are credible enough to display to the public. They've got a large experienced network of volunteer investigators across the U.S. and Canada who use various methods to determine the credibility of reports.
So, here's my question. The ones that are on the website, as being credible.
Yep.
What is their proof that it's a credible? You know, do they just say the sheriff saw this and we think it's credible because he's a sheriff? Or do they actually come back and say, we interviewed the sheriff, we found him to be credible, nobody has claimed that this is a hoax, we went to the location and we saw Bigfoot prints, and here are the pictures of the castings. How do they substantiate their own claims of credibility when they're going after this other person for not having any credible evidence? Where's theirs? I've never been on the site, so they may have it. I'm just wondering how they substantiate their claims while they're ripping on this other person for not having any.
I'll give you that. And so I'm going to read you what their answer is. None of the modern reports in the BRFO's online database are made public without some kind of investigation. The nature of these investigations vary. The most complex investigations involve field searches with experienced trackers and wildlife biologists, surveillance projects, and lab analysis of forensic evidence. The less complex investigations involve phone interviews and other steps to verify the relevant information. If a witness cannot be contacted and interviewed, etc., the report is not considered credible. Credible witnesses are usually eager to have their sightings investigated, even if they don't want the information posted online. Sighting reports sent to the BRFO are analyzed, evaluated, and investigated with techniques and approaches derived from the legal profession, law enforcement, and investigative journalism. The legal profession often relies exclusively on witness testimony to determine facts. In a court of law, conclusions are determined under various standards, such as more likely than not standard and the more stringent beyond a reasonable doubt standard. Every day in courtrooms across America, legal conclusions are handed down based solely upon witness testimony and often upon the testimony of a single witness and often under the more stringent beyond a reasonable doubt standard. In these situations, the evaluation of a witness is almost entirely subjective.
That's political crap.
Well, the second half of it is. The first half isn't. I mean, they're sending people out there like, you know, wildlife biologists, experienced trackers. They're putting up surveillance projects. They're bringing lab analysis with forensic science.
Well, right. I mean, I understand that. I'm not saying they don't do their job. What I'm saying is, what evidence do they present in order to say that these claims are good besides eyewitness testimony, which is, as they said, subjective? That's the same. You know, I agree with you. That is the same as what we do. We go in, we investigate, we put up our equipment, we do up our DVRs, you know,
right?
But we can never come back and say, you know, this place is active and have only personal experiences and no evidence to, you know, yeah, we can talk nonstop about every piece of equipment and all that we did to investigate. Yep. But if we don't come forward with the evidence, it's crap. So I just want to know, do they present their evidence? Or do they just say, we've done a whole bunch of tests and we found this claim to be good, you know, credible?
I think it's a combination of having credible witnesses and going out and doing castings of footprints that are found in the area. And okay, it, possibly, do and possibly hair footprints? Samples. You know, I mean, I don't know. I know there have been a few hair samples that have been collected that when they did the DNA testing on them, they did not match anything. That is a fact. So
they presented the paper that says the analysis, or did they? Because right now, it's the same as us. It's the same as us going in front of a client and saying, "Okay, we listened to the audio, and yeah, we got a few EVPs."
Yep.
And that's it. We don't actually present them,
right?
Or, you know, we took some photos. They were very, very weird. We had them tested by a professional, and he had no answer for us, and that was it. We don't actually present the photos.
That would be bad.
Well, it would be bad, but that's what I'm asking. You know, I'm not trying to, it sounds like I'm really trying to like debunk their entire website and everything that they're doing. I'm not, but it, you know, if we're talking about, you know, I guess I'm upset at the fact of these people, you know, that the website would go after, and I don't know who these people are because I haven't read the Wikipedia page. I haven't been on the BFRO. Did I say that right?
Right. BFRO. Yep. Yeah, BFRO.
You know, I didn't go on. I've not been on their website, but if they are going to attack another person in the field and say this person does not know what they're talking about, they don't do anything, they don't substantiate anything, and then come back and say, but we do, because we say we do, and we say we do all these things, but we don't actually present it, angers me.
Well, I think that you're going off on a tangent there a little bit, because they do present, I mean, they have a collection of their castings. They have taken the hair and for forensic analysis. They have shown the DNA results from
That's what I was asking you.
Yeah, from the, but then you got off on a tangent. I didn't want to cut you off. You were on fire there for a minute.
Well, the answer was yes.
Yes.
I mean, do they present their evidence?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I don't want to speak for them. I don't work for the BRFO, so I don't want to turn this into a Mike is against the BRFO and somehow I'm the spokesman for BRFO, because that isn't the case.
I'm not against the BRFO.
Right. I don't want to get to that, so.
It's just, you know, my first question to you after, you know, you read their attacking of this other person was, do they present their own? Not getting a yes right away angered me, because
I was still looking and I didn't want to speak out of turn. So,
All right. So if they find evidence,
yes,
they do present it.
Yes.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know.
Yep.
Well then, tangent debunked, although everything that I said was still my opinion on how things should be.
Well, right, absolutely.
But if they present their evidence, then they should be able to say something about other people who don't. You and I would, for another paranormal investigative team.
Right.
If they were to do that, if they were to come and be like, well, 80% of, you know, hauntings are, you know, are not hauntings.
Yeah.
Okay, well, where's your evidence of that?
Right.
Because we have 1,000 flipping EVPs that say you're wrong.
Right.
And I can prove that. I have the proof that says you're wrong. Where's your proof that says I'm wrong?
Right. Exactly.
So, you know, so, okay.
Right. So
tangent done.
You will like this. You will like this. Because this is kind of how we label our EVPs. So on here, it says that they put them into three classes. So class A, class B, and class C. So we'll start with the worst. So class C, most secondhand reports and any third-hand reports or stories with untraceable sources are considered class C because of the high potential for inaccuracies. These reports are kept in archives but are very rarely listed publicly in the database. The exceptions are for published or locally documented incidences from before 1958. And it says here, before the word Bigfoot entered the American vocabulary. And sightings mentioned in non-tabloid newspapers or magazines. So that's a class C. So class B, incidences where a possible Sasquatch was observed at a great distance or in poor lighting conditions, and incidences in any other circumstance that did not afford a clear view of the subject are considered to be class B reports. Kind of what a class B EVP for you and I would be. So let's see. For example, credible reports where nothing was seen but distinct and characteristic sounds of Sasquatches were heard are always considered class B and never class A, even in the most compelling cases. This is because the lack of a visual element raises a much greater potential for a misidentification of the sounds. And then obviously class A reports involve clear sightings in circumstances where misinterpretation or misidentification of other animals can be ruled out with greater confidence. For example, there are several footprint cases that are very well documented. These are considered Class A reports because misidentification of common animals can be confidently ruled out, thus potential for misinterpretation is extremely low.
Okay. All
right. I mean, so at least they're putting their things into a class system similar to what we do as far as the quality of what they catch.
Yes.
So, okay. So let's not get lost on the BRFO. I just use them as a as a little bit of a database because they have the most concise information because they're the team, they're the group of individuals who actually keep track of everything and then kind of keep the numbers current and stuff like that. And they're in the public eye. And I guess if you've got to trust somebody on the internet, I trust them more than welcome to Jim Bob's Squatch Central, you know, and his interpretation of what he thinks he knows. So, right. so getting back to where we were about 15 minutes ago.
I was going to say, you mean when we wanted to go to commercial?
Yeah. Well, let's just throw this out there and then we'll go to commercial. So,
all right.
We need to get back to the 800 and some sightings now that we have now that we've gone over the classifications of them. So they're either credible daylight, you know, high visibility conditions. They're not common animals. That is easily ruled out, that they're not misinterpretations of animals that people normally see. Some of them, and I don't know the exact percentages, but some of them come along with things like hair samples, footprints taken right from the location where the thing was seen. I know that on some of the episodes of, you know, the BRFO show, you know, they actually go back and try to recreate as best they can some of these locations and things that people saw, and some of the terrain that these beings are seen in. It would be impossible for a human being to even get up the slope of the hill, let alone do it at a clip of speed where you're taking 6-7 foot strides. It's just not going to happen. A 7 foot tall dude in a gorilla suit is not turning into Superman with 185 pounds of hairy burlap on himself and flying up the side of a mountain in 7 foot strides. You show me a guy who can do that, and I'll tell you Bigfoot is fake for the rest of my life. There ain't nobody doing it. It ain't going to happen. And with that, we'll go to commercial and come back and talk about the 850 or 825.
All right. So with our 15 minutes left after the commercial break, we will tie things all together for you. So you're listening to The Odyssey Files on Para X.
Hey, it's Chris Fleming. More painful than a Tyrannosaurus Rex stepping on your testicle. Listen to Dave and Mike on Odyssey Files.
Hey there. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a great new radio show on Para X. Two hosts, 1 hour, and too much fun. Stephanie and Heidi not only talk about the latest goings-on in the supernatural worlds, they live it. They want to hear from you. They want to help you understand and guide you. And they want you to tune in. So, grab a friend or come alone to gather around that metaphysical table with Heidi and Stephanie. If you're interested in the worlds of the unseen, tune in to The Gathering Radio Show, Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Para X Radio.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Oh, hey Heidi, what are you listening to? Heidi. Oh, hey Steph.
Hey,
what has your attention?
Oh, I'm listening to Para X, the calling radio show. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't. What's it all about?
Well, it's hosted by three guys, Jerry, Alan, and Will, and they talk about paranormal investigations, UFOs, cryptozoology, psychic phenomenon, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, well, it's kind of like The Gathering, but on Wednesday, right?
Yep, you got it.
The calling.
The calling.
The Calling. The Calling Radio Show every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time only on Para X.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Hey, this is Grant Wilson from Ghost Hunters, and if you ever have time that you never want to get back, spend it listening to Mike and Dave on the Odyssey Files.
And we're back. And wow, look at that, Dave. You weren't talking.
I totally made sure I was quiet as a church mouse just to blow you away because I knew you were waiting for me to come in early.
Well, we'll see when we have our phenomenal guest next week. We'll see if you can keep it wrapped up.
Well, hell, I'm going to be so excited that ain't going to happen.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm really excited, but we'll get to that later. We're busy right now.
We're busy with the big guy. Yeah.
Focusing on the Bigfoot, Mr. Sasquatch himself. And I don't know why I got like
I don't know where you went Oriental on Sasquatch.
I don't know why I went Oriental on that one, but I did. So my apologies.
That's funny.
It just kind of happens sometimes.
Yeah, it happens.
Okay, so before the commercial break, we were talking about credible sightings and the many, many, many of them each year.
Correct. So, you know, we of the 3,313 since 1950, we immediately threw half away, and then we knocked another half out. So basically, we knocked out 75% of that number. We're still looking at, you know, in the last, 68 years. We're still looking at 800 and some highly qualified sightings of some type of being that is 7 to 9 foot tall, 600 to 800 pounds, walks upright, possesses incredible strength. This is interesting. I was going to throw this in there when we were talking about the Gigantopithecus. All the giant apes in the world are herbivores, and Sasquatch is an omnivore. So in good times, they'll live on greens and fruits and berries and, you know, whatever, things like that. But when they have an opportunity comes to eat meat, they will kill deer and wild pigs, rabbits, stuff like that, and actually consume animals. So that's a huge difference in the – that's one of the biggest differences I saw when I was going through all the data. Like, could it be a giant – could he be a giant ape? Well, no, not unless he's a giant ape that went rogue and started killing and eating flesh, because no other giant apes are doing it. And then, obviously, he would have to transport himself around the whole entire United States and Canada, Pacific Northwest, at a rapid pace to be seen in all these different locations. I got something else I want to throw in there, too. Somebody said to me when I was bringing this topic up and I was talking to some people about it, they said to me, you know, I know how Bigfoot, I know that there's no Bigfoot. And I said, how do you know that? And they said, because they've never found any bones. And I said, okay, and what else? And they said, that's it. They never found any bones. There's no bones. There can't be any animal. Because all animals, when they die, they leave their bones. And if this is an animal, and even if it has a long, extremely long lifespan, it's not going to live forever. And so therefore, it would have had to have died. And eventually, somebody would have found their bones. So I did a little bit of research. Just for deer. Not all animals, just deer. And I'm a deer hunter, so I kind of focused on this. Every year in America, hunters kill 6 million deer on average. Another 1.5 million deer are killed by automobile accidents. Being hit, you know, cars hitting deer, whatever. Cars, trucks, whatever. So that's 7.5 million deer a year on average whose lives are taken. They say that the population that what hunters take out of the natural herd of deer in the United States, and we'll go up into Canada too, I guess, is something like 10 to 15%. All right, which means that would make the total herd somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 million deer. I've been deer hunting for 30 plus years. In all of that time, I have found two deer carcasses for all of the hundreds of miles that I have walked through thick brush while I was deer hunting. Two deer carcasses. How can there be 70 million deer dying and I only come across, in hundreds of miles of trails, I only come across two? So I posed that as a question to the person who was debating me on the fact that Bigfoot didn't exist because they couldn't find their bones. And they didn't have anything to say. So I'm curious, Mike, what does that do to your brain? I can see it's ticking.
Well, that was one of the my biggest hesitations is I agreed with your buddy or whoever you're talking about,
right,
is that you would think that with all the sightings, with all the people that are looking specifically for him, that we would have come across some. I mean, they came across fossils of the giant Diplophicus or whatever he's called.
Correct.
But no Bigfoot bones. Like, I'm not even talking about, like, an entire skeleton. Like, they haven't even come up with a bone.
Right.
And, you know, the thing about the deer is very, very interesting. But keep in mind that if somebody sees a dead deer on the side of the road or whatever,
yeah,
they just strap it to their hood and send it to the butcher. So, you know, it's humanly possible that hunters just beat you to the punch and, like, dragged the deer and, like, hey, this is good for some meat. And, you know, that's why you can, because there's no place that a deer is safe during hunting season. Dead or alive, it doesn't matter. Humans will find a way to send it to a butcher and turn it into jerky.
Correct.
So, and, you know.
But that's not only talking deer hunting season now. I'm just saying, as a deer hunter, I'm in the woods, and there's a lot of other people in the woods, you know, throughout the year, whether you're harvesting, foraging for mushrooms or collecting wild berries or just doing nature photography or wildlife study or research or whatever, that you would think that you would basically be almost tripping over deer carcasses. And if you really want to throw that together in the mix, you're talking, then you can throw in bears, you can throw in wild pigs, you can throw in rabbits, you can throw in squirrels. There's just not a whole lot of dead animals ever in the woods.
And keep in mind that, you know, take into account the survival of the fittest.
Yep.
You know, if a deer dies, a bear is probably going to eat it.
Something.
You know, if a squirrel dies, a bear is probably going to eat it.
Yeah.
But I can't foresee Bigfoot getting killed. Although I would love to see a video of a Bigfoot versus a bear. I personally think that's a YouTube, you know, viral video right there.
Yeah.
So, you know, with the final minutes left,
yeah,
and I'm kind of glad you brought up the bones, because that was my biggest hesitation. Is there's never been
a skeleton?
Never been any? Yeah. Not even so much a skeleton, but it's very, very rare to even find a piece of hair. And, you know, all they can do is say, we can't attribute this to any sort of animal.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
Like, I don't understand why there can't be, like, a collection. Because, I mean, if we found 50 samples of hair, and all we do is come up with this doesn't match anything.
Right.
Well, can't we match it to the other unmatchables? Or are they all completely different?
And I don't know if that has or has not happened, to be honest with you. I did not research that. So that could be happening. And if it's not, shame on the whole entire network for not already doing that. And if they do it now, we have the rights to it because it's our idea. So you have to pay us a royalty.
If only that worked that way.
I know. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
So, We got about 5 minutes left. So I just want to say, as my personal belief, I'm skeptical. I'm an open-minded skeptic when it comes to Bigfoot, because almost every single sighting is a personal experience, you know, and that's it. I saw Bigfoot. I mean, all of the videos, you think with HD technology, somebody would be able to get a clear video of Bigfoot, but all of them is blurry and all of them is, you know, from 300 yards away where you can barely see anything. And I scoff at the fact that there is no concrete undebunked, even though I know you said the Patterson Grimm video is completely real and cannot be faked. I respect that. I understand. So I'm just an open-minded skeptic at this time, based on the fact that with all the people in the world and all of our technology and all of our camera, everybody, like, we can pull out a camera at any time of the day now. You know, all you need is 5 seconds and you have a video going.
Yep.
We can't get concrete, full-on proof that can't be debunked. Because you even heard Kim and Steph last week say they have a pair of Bigfoot feet that they want to go out and try.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't take much to fake.
No, not at all.
Print.
Right.
And so I just think with all the people, all of our technology, everything that we have going for us, that we cannot find a concrete, here he is, I'm 10 feet away from him, he's growling at me or he's laughing at me, whatever, that we can't do that. And so that's why I remain open to the fact that he could exist, because I'm not arrogant enough to completely think that we need to know everything right now, but I think we could get more than what we have.
Well said. I totally agree with you on the lack of a great HD photo or even a short video clip. I don't know that I'd want to be 10 feet away from it, whatever it is. I do believe in Bigfoot. I think there is something there. I think I've seen and read and studied enough to kind of throw away what's the junk. And even when I throw away everything that could even be potentially remote, there's still some good stuff that just, I can't shake it. I just can't get rid of it. And so I'm going to say he exists, but I don't have a single clue what it is. I don't know if it's like legitimately real, if it's a mammal of some type. I don't know if it's some type of being, like interdimensional being that has the ability to travel at will between our world and some other realm and plane. I don't know. But I'm going to go on record as saying that he's there, and it's just up to somebody, some lucky person who's going to catch that concrete evidence. Because I tell you what, that there's going to be a lot of money involved when somebody catches some concrete evidence.
Yeah. The one thing that I hope, and I think this is why, you know, it's kind of a popular theory that women will be
the first
to make like contact with it, is because all we want to do is shoot things.
Yep.
You know, everybody that even the TV shows, every single one of them has this big rifle with them.
Right.
And if there is a Bigfoot out there and he's up on Thule and he's some, even if he's a prehistoric or ancient race of animal that we have not really come in contact with, he's going to be smart enough to stay away.
Yep.
So I think that if man, and when I say man, I mean men, want to get out there and actually, I think they need to drop the aggression. I think they need to go in with some respect I mean, maybe a knife to, you know, somewhat protect yourself, or maybe not even that. Maybe you're just comfortable being in a group. But I think Bigfoot is going to be smart enough to know when you're probably there to cause him harm.
I think
think everybody, men specifically, all they want to do is capture and shoot and find some, you know, I shot Bigfoot. I think they want that to be the headline instead of I had a conversation with Bigfoot, or I took a selfie with Bigfoot. So
you get a selfie with Bigfoot, man, and I'm telling you what, you are going to be the king of the world.
I agree. I agree heartily.
Yeah.
So that does it for us tonight. Thank you for listening. Our 3-week stint is now up on Bigfoot. I'm sure we will talk about him again in the coming months and weeks. Tune in next week for a huge show, as we have psychic medium Chip Coffee will be our guest.
Yay.
Next week. Yes, very excited about that. Looks like another rerun of Paracave coming up next. So for Dave and myself, I want to wish everybody a very happy night and a very good week. See you next week.